ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
ॐ दट् ब्रह्मन् इज़् इन्फिनिट् and this universe is also infinite. The infinite proceeds from the infinite. Taking the infinitude of the infinite universe, it remains as the infinite Brahman alone. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. We are studying the fourth section of the first chapter of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. The important point we discussed in our last class, that having created the self, entered everything, all bodies, up to the very tips of the nails, and the Upanishad gives a small analogy, like a razor, which is kept in a most fitting case. That is to convey to us that there are no two things called the case and the razor. It means everything is Brahman. Then what happened? He realized. What did he realize? He is all. He is everything. So he said, having created, I realized that I am everything. If we understand that statement, it means all of us are Brahman only. Anything that is made up of clay cannot be anything other than clay. Anything that is made up of gold cannot be anything other than gold. That's why the Upanishad warns us that if anyone, because of course of avidya or maya, looks upon God as different from oneself, as a deity to be worshipped externally, one becomes like an animal to the gods, meaning he becomes a servant to his own ignorance. This is beautifully explained later on. But what it means here, in a sense, that God means what? Anybody, first condition, anybody who is separate from us, and anybody about whom we think he is superior to us, in strength, in beauty, in power, in position, in possessions. So what do we become? We start to depend upon them. A baby depends upon the mother. A poor man depends upon the society. A weak person depends upon the stronger person, etc., etc. So here God means what? He who can help. He is a God, whether it be a doctor or a lawyer or a professor or a musician, anybody. That is what we are doing. And here the Upanishad gives that the gods do not wish us to become free. Just as if a man had possessed 1,000 cows like Yajnavalkya, and if one of the cows is missing, he goes after that missing cow, he cannot take rest until that cow is found, because he doesn't want to lose the service of even one cow. So, in this world, we are dependent upon everything. We are born slaves. That is why it is said, our body itself is made up of food. We are born of food. We are sustained by food, and we are food, and we go back to food, and we can apply the same thing to all the five koshas. Every kosha is dependent upon every other kosha. This is a point we have to note down. We think that Anandamaya kosha, being the superior most kosha, is not dependent. No, suppose there is a person, he is weak, he cannot move, but he has a desire, he wants to be happy. I want to eat. a cup, a lozenge, a biscuit, or anything for that matter. But he can't move. So he has to call somebody and say, would you kindly give it to me? That is why in the West, especially in the West, but the same disease is spreading all over the world, including India. People feel embarrassed to be served by their own grandchildren, children in old age. They think it is hurting their egotism. I am dependent upon you. Any dependence, a foreign government rules, we are dependents. So any dependence is slavery. And the people upon whom we depend, those are called gods. And these gods do not want to lose anybody. That's what this Upanishad wants to point out. One becomes like an animal to the gods, meaning one becomes a servant because of his own ignorance. What is this ignorance? I am considering myself as separate from the other one. Not only slavery to living beings, we also have to consider to how many non-living things we are. We have become slavish. A good house, we are slaves to cars, even more slavish to our mobile phones, slavish to everything, living, non-living. And that is why the Upanishad tells us, slavishness is anatma, depend upon anatma. Seeing anything other than me as something different from me, and not only different, that I am dependent upon. I consider the other object as superior to me, and I cannot survive, I cannot obtain anything, I cannot be a happy person. That slavish mentality leads, the real suffering is to feel that I am bound. But the Upanishad tells that there is nothing separate. The living, the non-living, sarvam kalvidam brahma. This is the very core of Advaita, non-duality. So Shankaracharya emphasizes that the difference between the individual and Brahman doesn't really exist. It is caused only by ignorance, by my ignorance, thinking that I am separate from Brahman. The moment I realize I am Brahman, I am the all fear, all limitation vanish. Remember, earlier we have discussed fear comes from the second. Dvitiya dvai bhayam bhavati. And this is expressed in this fifth mantra of this fourth section. So, Veda aham vava srishti rasmi aham hi idam sarvam asrukshiti. After this vast projection, actually this word projection is something very important word. The moment we hear creation, like a potter creating a pot, our whole understanding becomes awry. But the moment we realize it's a projection, a cinema, a film machine is projecting light and making it pass through a film. And what we are experiencing is nothing but manifest projection of the light. Everything is light. How do we know? Because you just stop that film moving machine and only pure light will be there. That is why before the cinema starts, pure white screen. After the cinema ends, pure white screen. Without that screen, no projection will become visible, experienceable. What is that screen? That is compared to our pure mind. And what is that? What reveals that screen? Pure consciousness. So this is mantra in this fifth mantra. Tatah srishtira bhavat, srishtya ahi asya yetasyam bhavati. And anybody after studying this Upanishad, after getting this instruction, this valuable teaching, and he first hears it with faith, then he ponders over it, that is called upasana, and he realizes it. Like Brahman realized, I am everything. When we realize I am everything, there would be no difference between Brahman and me. So anyone, not only Brahman, any person, he Ya evam Veda. He understands, I am Brahman because I am a projection of Brahman. A projection of Brahman is non-separate from Brahman. He remains with that self-knowledge. And then in the sixth mantra, we get something about creation. That is why I did not give importance to that. So we will move to the seventh mantra, where it is said, first of all, this creation remained unmanifest. That is called avyakrita. Bhagavan Krishna calls it avyakta. Avyakta adhini bhutani, vyakta madhyani bharata, avyakta nidhananyeva, tatra ka paridevana. What is birth? The unmanifest becoming manifest. And what is death? The manifest going back into the its source, cause. That is called death. Why are you so much grieving about this fact? There is no death. Bhishma is not going to die. Drona is not going to die. And you are not going to die. Not only that, Duryodhana is not going to die. You have taken a vow. I am going to kill Duryodhana and all his 99 brothers. No, that's not going to happen. You are going to kill only the outer layers, dresses. Every kosha is a dress. However fine it is, it doesn't reveal what we really are. That which covers our real nature, that is called a kosha. Even Anandamaya kosha is a cover. Why is it called a cover? First of all, it is experienceable. Anything experienceable, there is a division between the experiencer and the experienced, the subject and the object. So if I am deriving Ananda from the reflection of that Brahmananda in my own purified mind, I am only looking at the reflection in the mirror of Brahmananda. I have to break that mirror. Then the difference between, distinction between, separation between Jiva and Paramatma, it vanishes. Until that time, the mirror may be the cleanest mirror and it may show me as experiencing Ananda. But since it is a kosha, kosha means like a scabbard, like a case which houses the razor. So we will have to overcome that, destroy that. Destroying means knowing that it is only my ignorance which is appearing as the panchakoshas. There are no real concrete panchakoshas. So this is supporting the Bhagavad Gita's view. Birth is, or srishti, creation is nothing but the unmanifest becoming manifest. What is the problem? The unmanifest is non-transactional. You cannot, like butter, it is unmanifest in the milk, but you can't put it on your piece of bread, toast, and enjoy it. You will have to separate it. Similarly, this kosha separates us from Bhagavan. So everything is unmanifest for transactional purpose. This, what remains invisible, non-transactionable, if it has to become transactionable, it has to become manifest. So then from this unmanifest world, this manifest world has come. That is what the seventh mantra wants to explain. Tad ha idam tarhi avyakrutam asit. This universe before creation remained undifferentiated. Namarupa bhyameva vyakriyata. Then it became differentiated into form and name. And therefore, it was called as such, such and such. This is a mango tree. So that mango tree is a form. And that word mango tree is a name. The name and the named, there is no difference. God and his name, there is no difference. But the difference is, the named will be, we are thinking it is an object. And the name is the way to think about that object. And the name is a thought. The named is an object. This beautiful psychological trick is called by Kalidasa. Before he commenced writing the Raghuvamsa, he prays to Shiva and Parvati. Vagarthau iva sampruptau. Vak means speech. Speech means name. Artha meaning. It's what is called name. Just as an object and its name are inseparable. So, Parvati Parameshwara, they are the mother and father of this entire universe. And they are also inseparable. In other words, Brahman and Shakti are indifferent. You cannot separate them. You can think them as separate. In concept, they can be separated. But in reality, you cannot separate it. So, I am going to write this beautiful poem called Raghuvamsa. Therefore, O Mother and Father, you are the creator and creatrix of this entire universe. And you are inseparable. This world also is inseparable. The object and its name are inseparable. So, for the sake of beautiful poetry, the appropriate words should come from the depths of my mind, and it should come to me in the form of thoughts, and I will put those thoughts as my written poem, Raghuvamsa. So, in the beginning, avyakruta means name and form are not there. But now, they have become manifest, visible, experienceable, transactionable. And therefore, how are they transactionable? You look at any object, you see nama, rupa, that is all you see. You see the form and you give it a name to separate it from other objects. And then only after having the knowledge, this is such and such an object, then we will start thinking, how does it serve my purpose? If there are two glasses and in rich people's houses, these glasses are separated and they will hang certain glasses upside down. They are created like that. So they are called wine glasses. But if somebody wants to drink water, then there will be ordinary glass. They don't keep them upside down hanging. So because they drink from the hanging glasses, in course of time, they also become hanged. So this world was unmanifest and it is not transactionable, and without transaction we cannot survive. Therefore everything that is created is divided into nama and rupa, and we have to add a purpose. So this is how creation means only name and form. I am just reminding you, the great scholar Vidyaranya said, what is Brahman? Brahman is nothing but Sat, Chit and Ananda. What is the world? Sat, Chit, Ananda plus form plus name. What is Brahman? Prapancha. Sat, Chit, Ananda minus form minus name is called Brahman. There is no difference. And then we enter into another beautiful portion of this in the fourth section. So this is called Pravesha Shruti. Having created, what did Saguna Brahma or Ishvara do? He entered. How much he entered? Completely. He is the hair of the hair. He is the nail of the nail. He is the toe of the toe. He is the back of the back. He is the hand of the hand. He is the leg of the leg. He is the eye of the eye. He is the ear of the ear, etc. Then what is the difference? Actually, there is no difference. It is only because we are ignorant. We thinking hand is different, leg is different, and they are not Brahman. They are Anatma. But what is the purpose of the Upanishad? Sa esha iha pravishtaha. Saha means that creator, esha. Esha means that which is in front of me. Iha pravishtaha.
He entered A Nakha Grebhyo, up to the very tips of the fingernails. And then I gave you earlier, Yadha Kshuraha Kshuradhane Abhaita, like a sword that is kept in a scabbard. Vishwambharova Vishwambhara Kulaye Tamna Pashyante Akrutsnaha. The self has entered into these bodies up to the tips of the nails, as a razor may be put in its case, or as a fire, which sustains the world, may be in its source, which is wood. When there is dry wood, we do not see the fire there. But that kind of seeing, this is wood, but that is fire. This is a hand, this is not a leg. This knowledge springs from ignorance, so it is avidya. So what does it mean? Why is this Upanishad telling us? So the Upanishad wants to convey to us, all right, sir, you have been telling me about Brahman, how he created this world, and the goal of life is that you have to claim that I am none other than Brahman, because Brahman alone is manifesting or is projecting himself as this world. What is this world? Nothing but name and forms. But if you forget the names and forms, the substance is nothing but Brahman. Okay, now we are suffering because of the limitations. And the limitation is caused by ignorance. What is ignorance? Focusing on the forms and names, but not on the substance. And this Namarupa are called Anatma, non-self. So to help us, the Upanishad is telling, now forget about Namarupa, focus upon Brahman. And where is this Brahman to be focused upon? In the Sanctum Sanctorum. Where is the Sanctum Sanctorum? That is there within. In order to teach us that lesson, then this Anupravesha, entering into the creation, means you look inside you. And how do you look inside you? Because you have to consciously direct your eye or attention, which is now looking outward, must be made to turn inside. And that turning, whether it is from the outside to inside or from inside to outside, can take place only by the aid of consciousness. And that consciousness is to be realized as Brahman, but we cannot simply by hearing you are consciousness, and as consciousness you are Brahman, for it will enter through one ear and will go out through the other ear. That means Brahman is available for contemplation in the mind as the witness consciousness, Sakshi. I dealt on this subject for a quite long time. We have two eyes, not E-Y-E, the capital letter I. One is the participating eye. I am sitting, I am looking, I am hearing, I am talking, I am eating, etc. The other is witnessing. Witnessing, so I was in the waking state, I was in the dream state, then I entered and enjoyed uninterrupted rest for quite some time, for a length of time, and again I entered into the waking state. I was the waker, I was the dreamer, I was the sleeper. Waker is different from sleeper. Sleeper is separate from sleeper. Dreamer is separate from sleeper. Sleeper is separate from waker. But that states are different. But I, like a person, I first enter into room number A, leave it, enter into room number 2, leave it, and enter into room number 3, leave it, and enter into room number 1. Why room number 1 only? Can I not enter room number 4? Yes, that is called Turiya state. There is no room number 5. There is no room for room number 5. So, that fourth is not a fourth state. It is the only state which is manifesting as state number 1, waking, state number 2, dreaming, state number 3, as deep rest. So Shankaracharya says, Anupravesha means Brahman is available in the mind as the witness consciousness, Sakshi. Now, what is spiritual life? To shift the attention, to shift our identity from the participating I to the witnessing I. There was a beautiful story. Let us remember this one. Sri Ramakrishna, either he heard it and repeated it, or he created. He had a very creative mind, remember. So there was a yogi, and there was another yogi who thought that he was superior because he obtained some special powers. So one day he wanted to exhibit his powers in front of the first yogi. Do you know my powers? No. What powers do you have? Just at that time, an elephant was passing by. So the yogi looked and said, may you die. Immediately, the elephant fell down dead. And he looked at the first yogi. And if there was no discernible expression in the face of the first yogi, then the second miraculous yogi looked at the elephant and said, now come out alive. Immediately, the elephant came out alive. And now the second yogi was looking for an appreciation. Oh, what a marvelous power you have. But the first yogi, who was a true yogi, he said, what had happened? The elephant was passing, it was dead, it came back alive. And then he said, what did you gain by that? Did you know the ultimate truth, God? Supposedly, the second yogi learned his lesson. So there is a story of two brothers. Perhaps you will remember. I am not going to repeat it. So they met after a long time. And the younger one wanted to show what he achieved after 12 years of hard tapasya. So he walked on water. Whereas the elder brother had to take a boat. Did you see my power? Elder brother, what power? What? You have wasted 12 years of your time, which I could accomplish by just paying half an hour to the boatsman. So Shankara says that we will have to become one with that Sakshi. What is Sakshi? Just witness. Somebody came and abused me. Okay, I am witnessing. Somebody came and honored me. Okay, I am witnessing. What happened to me? Nothing happened. No change has taken place to me. That is very difficult state, but that is a wonderful state. Anyway, I just remember now a funny incident that happened in the life of Ramana Maharshi. So this Ramana Maharshi became very popular, especially some Westerners have recognized him, started coming. How much they understood, God alone knows, but some of them were highly devoted to him. And it is because of them that Ramana Maharshi's name became well known actually. They have written books also about him. Some of them were very genuine spiritual aspirants. So what happened? Some fake sannyasins, they came to know that Ramana Maharshi did not have a guru. So one day one of that fake fellow, along with some of his followers, somehow these people gather some good followers also around them. The more fake it is, the more followers will be there. So he came and boldly declared in front of Ramana Maharshi, yesterday night, Lord Shiva had appeared to me in the dream and commanded me to initiate you because without guru, you cannot really obtain anything. It was Ramana Maharshi's habit to just keep quiet. But one of the very intelligent followers of Ramana Maharshi, by the way, Ramana Maharshi did not physically initiate anybody as disciples. Only he talked with them. That's all. And some of them took them as what is called initiation, diksha. Now, one of them was very intelligent. He said, yes, it is true that I also came to know that Shiva appeared in your dream and asked you to come to Ramana Maharshi and then initiate him. But I also had the same dream. But 1 second after he commanded you and you departed, Shiva looked at me and said, I think I committed a mistake. These people, you must go to them. When they appear, you take a big stick and then beat them. So just as you obeyed Shiva's commandment, I am also going to obey. So he, nearby there was a stick, maybe Ravana Maharshi's own stick, I don't know. So he started, seeing he was a hefty fellow, and that fake guru and his disciples took to their heels. So why am I telling this story? That if we identify ourselves with the participating I, we go up and down, we become very happy, we become very sad, we become victims of terrible emotional turmoils. But if we identify with the Sakshi, yes, I was born, yes, I was there. For that also, Sri Ramakrishna's beautiful story is there. One Shiva and Parvati was sitting on the Mount Kailas. Suddenly, they heard a little bit loud sound, thum, like that. And it is said, Parvati was startled and said, Lord, what is that sound? Ravana was born. And a few, 1 or 2 seconds later, another sound was, similar sound was heard. Lord, what is the second sound? Ravana is dead. Ravana is born. Ravana is dead. I am born. I am also going to die. What did I gain in the meanwhile? And that thinking is more useful to us than I did this, I did that. I could have done that, but I did not do it. I am going to do that. All these are useless thoughts. Therefore, the Jivatma and Paramatma are identical, but you have to turn your attention inward. First identify with the Sakshi Jiva. That is called moral life. That is called making the mind absolutely still. That is called Chitta Vritti Nirodha. And there afterwards, one abides in one's own nature. So that is what is called a benefit. How to become Sakshis? All our spiritual practices are for that purpose. And the Upanishad continues, Sa yo ekaikam upaste nasa veda akrishnaha hi eshovatha ekaikena bhavati. If we do not realize that everything is Brahman, then we remain in deep ignorance. But atma iti eva upasita atrahi ete sarvam ekam bhavati. The moment we turn our attention inside, then everything becomes one, because there is no second. Ekam eva advitiyam. Chandogya Upanishad we have seen. Only one, infinite. You cannot detract, you cannot multiply, you cannot subtract, you cannot multiply. Anything you can do, anything you do, infinite remains infinite only. That is the Shanti part also we have seen. So, Purnameva Avasishyate. Only infinite remains, even though this universe has come. Come where? Where from does it come? Where does it stand? Infinite cannot change. That which is changeless is called infinite. So therefore, it is a commandment is given here. Tadetat padaniyam asya sarvasya ed ayam atma anena hi etat sarvam meda. Yathah vai padena anuvinde devam kirtim shlokam vindate yayevam veda. So one who knows this, he will become one with Atman, and everything is looked upon as manifestation of my own self, and this, according to Shankara, is the essence of the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Atma iti upasita. And here a beautiful definition is given. What is Atma? Sarvam apnoti iti Atma. One definition of Atma is that which obtains everything. That means that which obtains infinity. That is called Atma. Therefore, Atma iti upasita. So that is, with that, the 7th mantra is over. Now we are going to enter into the 8th mantra. This is also one of the most marvelous analysis of what is called a source of ananda. And the mantra goes like this. Tadetat preha putrat, preyo vittat, preyo anyasmat sarvasmat, antarataram et ayam atma. This self is dearer than a son, dearer than wealth, dearer than everything else, because it is the innermost. Sa yo anyam atmanam, atmanaha priyam bruvanam, bruyat priyam rochyati iti ishvaroha tatha eva syat. If one holds the dear as the most, the self as the most dearest object to one's own self, if he has to look at another person who thinks non-self is most dear, and addressing that second person, if this Atmagnani, knower of Atman, speaks of him that what you hold dear is going to be destroyed, and Roshyati, you are going to weep because of that, and it will come to Tatha Evasya. It is going to happen like that. In short, what it means is, anatma, anything non-self, anything finite, anything other than God, it is not going to survive because only Atman is there. So it is not that there is something other than Atman, but people think that God is sitting somewhere. Even if they happen to believe in God, He is sitting somewhere. He is the creator. He is all-powerful, He is all-knowing, He is all-compassionate, and He can do whatever He likes. But He is not, I am not He, He is separate. If anybody thinks like that, then that notion itself, that is called ignorance, that notion itself will be destroyed, maybe after 1,000 births, because avidya is going to be destroyed by vidya. But vidya is never ever going to be destroyed. Whatever is destructible is going to be destroyed. Whatever is non-destructible is ever going to remain exactly in the same way. Having said this, Upanishad says, Atmanam eva priyam iti upasit. One should meditate upon the self alone as a dear. And then concludes, what is the result? What does a person get? Sa yaha atmanam eva priyam upaste, nahi asya priyam pramayukam bhavati. He who meditates upon the self alone as dear, and what he holds dear, will not perish. And what is this person holding dear? Atmanam, one's own self. And one's own self is something that will never perish. That is to say, that you slowly develop love for Atman, and slowly develop through discrimination, proper discrimination, that everything is temporary. Whatever is temporary is called non-self. Whatever is limited, whatever is bound by time, space and causation is very temporary, and it is going to be there. And every second we are experiencing it. My body, which I love it so dearly, it was not what it was before I started this sentence. And by that time I utter the next sentence, even the present will be past and the future will become the present. It is continuously moving at mind-boggling speed. So this is a verse. So it says, Shankara quotes it, Shankaracharya quotes it very often. What is the essence of this mantra? That Atman, one's own self, is dearer than everything else. Here, Atma means Paramatma. Because if I see Paramatma is separate from my Atma, then I become Jivatma. Jivatma is a product of ignorance. It is limited by the very word Jivatma. There is birth, there is growth, there is change, there is death. What is called the 6 Shadvikaras? Asti, Jayate, Vardhate, Viparinamate, Apakshayate, etc. So, this Atman is dearer than a son, dearer than wealth, and dearer than everything else. So the question that comes is, why is the Atman dearest? And how is the Atman dearer than everything else. So beautiful light is thrown by Shankaracharya, says according to non-dual Vedanta. Remember, the word Vedanta is used by the Dvaita, Visishta Dvaita and Advaita. Whenever we say Vedanta, without mentioning Dvaita or Visishta Dvaita, we have to take it for granted. We are talking about Advaita Vedanta. There are only two things that every one of us love equally. There are only two things. What is it? I love happiness. When I say I love, I don't love dukkha. I don't love anything that makes me suffer. I only love happiness. And whatever gives me happiness, that object, that instrument, is the I love it because, not because of that object, because it becomes an instrument for me to experience happiness. So, what is our goal? Happiness is the goal. Unbroken, eternal, infinite happiness. And if I have to experience happiness, let us never forget, first of all, I should not encounter death. There should be no broken existence. So, unbroken, infinite existence called Sat, Asti, that is, must be there. If I want to be happy, I have to be alive. Not only that, I have to be aware that I am alive and I am very happy. That is why we cannot separate Sat, Chit and Ananda. So, with regard to this, there are certain points. So, why do we run after any object? We run after an object, we desire an object, we run after an object. If we think, whether it gives or not, that is a separate issue. But because we think, it gives us happiness. That means the object is not our goal. It is only the means. What is the object or objective? Happiness is the only objective. That is the first point. That is the second point of these two. Happiness and the object of happiness, which is primary, happiness alone is the primary. And why? Because once we squeeze all the juice from the sugar cane, are you going to love that sugar cane from which all rasa is completely squeezed out? No, not at all. And you see, after your stomach is filled, you don't love the food anymore. Until you become hungry again. It applies to wife, husband, children, friends, enemies, everything, religion, everything. And including God. I'll come to that point. So the question that comes, why do I love happiness? Why do I love? Because that is my very nature. Because I am happy only when I remain as myself. This is a principle. We have to understand very clearly, I am happy when I forget all the limitations, I go beyond time, space and causation, and at that time, I remain as my own self. That remaining as my own self is called happiness. Now, the secondary thing is, I love the means of happiness only because it helps me to unveil the happiness which is really coming from within myself. The moment any object stops giving happiness, my love for it also disappears. And it may even turn into hatred. One of our senior swamis used to give a beautiful example. Suppose you go to a friend's house late afternoon. First thing he offers is a good cup of coffee or tea, whatever it may be. And you are very happy. And you are longing for it. So, you enjoy it. And then seeing your happiness, suppose he offers a second cup of coffee. You may reluctantly accept it, drink it, but you notice it doesn't give the same amount of happiness because only the first sip, first cup will fulfill your desires. And if the friend forces you with a third cup, you are ready practically to beat him up. You get so much annoyed with him. So there is something called alam, sufficient. I cannot bear more than this one. That is the nature of every object. Once I squeeze happiness through an object. I no longer need that object. I no longer love that object. I even hate that object. That object becomes a means of hatred for me. So, the desire for happiness is unconditional. But the desire for the instrument or object of happiness is only mixed with condition. What is that condition? So long as it gives me happiness, I love it. The moment it ceases to give happiness, I will not love it anymore. Then the third point we have to learn, that Atman alone is happiness and Anatma is unhappiness. Because, why is the Anatma unhappiness? Because everyone truly loves only the Atma. Every love we have is only genuine love for the Atman. But children, possessions, house, all such things belong to the realm of Anatma only. We love them only because they give us happiness. The moment, whether it is husband or wife or children or friends, anybody, stop giving me happiness. That means start giving me unhappiness. I hate them. I want to run away from them as much as possible. So, it is a conditional love. What is the condition? So long as I get happiness, so long only I love. Any object, take for example, your phone. So long as the phone is working properly, then I am happy. The moment it starts delaying even for a second, or going back, or shuts itself off, powers itself off, restarts, then I go for the next phone. In fact, it is this principle, maybe the latest iteration of the phone, it gives me more happiness by giving me more freedom, faster. That is what makes us buy the new things. But really speaking, it is only an instrument of happiness, if at all. But that which can be the instrument of happiness, inevitably can also become the instrument of unhappiness also. So, it applies to God also. If we are devotees of God, and if God doesn't fulfill our desires, how long are you going to stand that God? In fact, we don't love God. Even when you are meditating, sitting so-called, you label yourself as a devotee, the moment you spend some time, and then God becomes an object of boredom, you don't get any happiness from him, then you excuse yourself, get up and do anything excepting thinking about God. And if God doesn't save you, when you are expecting him to save you, he doesn't give you, fulfill your desires. Many people become disbelievers, non-believers, because they think this God is a useless God, not a useful God. That means our love for God is a mistaken love. We consider God as the biggest object for our happiness, helping our happiness. But when we understand it is not going to happen, then we discard God. That is how we have not yet developed. And what is the true love? Oh God, I love you because I am happy just by loving you. I don't want anything from you. If I want anything from you, you become an instrument. You become an object. I don't want that one. Then the question comes, very important question. The Upanishad itself says, a jnani identifies himself with everybody, loves everybody equally, is unselfish towards everybody, sacrifices everything for everybody. How come? Because here he says, jnani is love, not as an individual, not as an object. Every object is a subject to a jnani. That is called, in plain language, I see God in you. Love thy neighbor as thyself, as you love God as yourself. Beautiful words with full of meaning. So the jnani's love is only in what is called selfish love. Why do we call it selfish love? Because he thinks everything is my own self. That is called, that selfishness is a different selfishness than thinking that I am this individual, everything should cater for my own happiness. That's why Jnani's love is universal love. And that is a beautiful Sanskrit name is there for that. It's called Sarvatma Bhavana. That is, I am everything. I became everything. I am everything. Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Then another point raised also. These are all the hints we get from the great Shankaracharya. Why do I love anything at all? Because I love whatever is nearer and intimate to me. And what is the nearest object to me? Only the Atman. Children are separate. They are born at some time and they go at some time, or I may go, but I am close to them only so long as I think that they are mine. Why does a mother love her children? Only because she thinks, this is me, I, in the form of my children. She doesn't love neighbor's children. She doesn't love anybody else's children. If some danger comes, she will rush to save only her children. It is not because of her love for her children, because of her knowledge that I am my children. And Jnani extends this to the whole universe, living and non-living, whereas a mother can only extend it at best only to itself. But it is also said, according to when a monkey is carrying its young one, and if it has to walk on glowing hot charcoal, it will put its child and walk on its body. Everything is like that. There is a great lot of truth in it. So Atman is the nearest to us. And therefore, that which is nearest means what? Not separate from me, but me only. That is why we love our Atman. And the nature of our Atman is Ananda. And this love is equivalent to Ananda. When I identify with myself, I feel extremely happy, and vice versa. Therefore, this is called the psychology of love. The Atman is dearer than anything. That anything and everything is called Anatma. Beautiful points are still there. We will talk about them in our next class. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Svitva Pranamami Mohur Mohu. May Ramakrishna, Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with Bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.